So next up, we have a talk about deep learning, but deep learning with Go, with Rashmi. So round of applause for her.
Hi, everyone. So my topic is deep learning for golfers. Have you heard about deep learning ever before? Deep learning has revolutionized many aspects of research and industry, not only autonomous vehicles, healthcare, medicine, and whatnot. And there are so many apps in deep learning which works in various aspects of the deep learning, like NLP, computer vision, security, finance, and whatnot. So before we go back, I mean, before we delve deeper into what is deep learning, I want to ask a question. What is intelligence? I want to define intelligence as it's a process in order to, I want to define intelligence. It's the ability to process information to make informed future decisions. The field of AI involves building of those applications which mimic the human behavior, which helps in behaving the human behavior in order to develop those algorithms. And machine learning is a subset of artificial intelligence which helps in which gives the ability to learn a program without any without human intervention and without being explicitly being programmed. And deep learning is a subset of machine learning, which takes one step more, which extracts the pattern from the data using neural networks. But why we want to study deep learning? Because the classical machine learning algorithms, they are very time-consuming, they have the hard engineer features, and they are very brittle and not scalable in practice. For example, they require manual intervention in order to have the better accuracy of the models. And that's why the deep learning comes into play, when we want to understand what are the features, what are all the sequences are present in the already existing data, so that we can, make our models be able to generalize and get the predictions out of it. For example, in a simple face recognition algorithm, firstly we extract the low-level features, like we find some edges, we find portions of the images which are very low-level, either finding the shapes of the image, shapes from the images, and then we extract those images and then we do the collaboration of those features which are extracted from a low level. Let's say we have extracted shapes and lines, and then we can extract those shapes and lines in order to find next feature. Maybe it could be the structure of the mouth, or it could be structure of the shape of the eye or something. So those are called as mid-level features. Or furthermore, we can get high-level features from those which compose what is the structure, what is the shape, what is the actual face of the person. So this the high-level features is being played by the deep learning. And this all process of finding the low-level features, mid-level features, as well as high-level features is being done by the deep learning itself. These are all, that's done in a hierarchical manner. Let's understand the basic building block of the deep learning, which is a perceptron or a single neuron. So here is an example wherein we take multiple inputs in the part of the perceptron. Multiple inputs as in the X1, X2, and XC that represent multiple inputs which are fed into the model, and W1, W2, and W3, they are corresponding to the weights being associated to those inputs. And 1 over here represents the bias. Why is bias being used in the deep learning? Because bias adds an activation layer, because it helps in the flow of the activation layer. And we do the summation of all of these inputs and apply the activation function on top of it in order to get the output. We can see the generalized form in the form of a condensed mathematical formula, which is y naught is equal to the output, and y naught after applying the activation function with respect to the linear combination of inputs with the weight matrices, we apply the bias to it. So we can also understand the condensed mathematical formula which we have seen before in a form of a matrix or a vector. Here, X represents the vector of all the inputs which are fed into this model, and W is the vector of all the weights which are being applied to this particular neuron. So X represents all the inputs from X1 till XM, and W represents all the weights from X1 till XM. And so here I'm talking about the nonlinear activation functions. I'll talk about their importance as well further on in the slides. So here, just a simple structure of the neuron. Here I'm defining all the parameters, like activation function and input output and all the values being provided to the neuron. And the edge, again, I'm defining some of the parameters. So some of the activation functions, like sigmoid function. So sigmoid function basically ingests your input as a real data and gives out the output within the range of 0 to 1. And G over here represents the activation function being applied to the to your model. Apart from sigmoid activation function, there are a few activation functions available which are more widely used and they're more popular, which some of them is ReLU, which is a rectified linear unit. Why it is more popular? Because it's piecewise linear, and it is also easier to compute, and it gives the range gives the values within the range of 0 to z, where z is any value which is greater than 0, and it gives out the output to the value equal to 1 if it is z is greater than 0. Here is a simple program wherein I've declared this activation function, and I've already implemented the sigmoid, ReLU, and the tanH function. But what is the importance of using the activation function? Activation function not only introduces nonlinearity into the network, but they also solve a business problem, because most of the data that is being available online, which is being used in the deep learning models, is almost always nonlinear. So we need to apply activation functions. For example, if I want to build a neural network, in order to distinguish between the blue and the orange points over here, it might sound very easier to you that you can do it and distinguish as maybe like using two lines, we can distinguish blue as well as the orange points. But what if I say just using a single line, can you be able to distinguish between the orange and the blue points? It's hard if we use a linear activation function, because linear activation function produces always linear decisions. While nonlinear activation functions gives us the ability to approximate nonlinear approximate complex functions so that we can make complex decisions. Here is one more example of the perceptron, wherein weight vector 3, 3 and minus 2 is being fed to the model, and W naught is a bias which is being applied to that model. So if we use this, since we have already seen before this equation, wherein Y naught, which is the output, is equal to G and W naught plus X transpose W, if you substitute all these values, after doing the computation, you will see that it's just a line in the 2D, two dimension. And we can also see this line in a on a scale, on a X, on a feature space. And this feature space is nothing but it divides the space into two hyperplanes. What if we want a new input to be added to that feature space? So let's say there is a new input, which is minus 1, 2, and it can be added to this feature space. Let's build this neural network with perceptrons. So perceptron simplified version is, you do the dot product, that is x1 into w1 plus x2 into w2, these linear combinations, as in that you do the weighted summation of all the inputs and the weights, and then you apply the activation function in order to get your output. So three major steps in order to calculate the output for the perceptron. First is to calculate the dot product, the second is to apply the bias, and third is to compute the activation function. Here I've simplified this version of the perceptron where I've removed the weights and I've removed the bias over here in order to get Z, which is nothing but the weighted summation of all the inputs which is being applied along with the bias added to it. So we can see that single layer neural network comprises of multiple inputs and one hidden layer. That's because a single layer. That's why it has one single layer, hidden layer over that, and the final output. So we say the middle, the orange layer, as a hidden layer, because that is not controllable. We do take care of what the inputs that we feed into our model, and what we aim for in order to get our output is y hat cap and y1 hat, y2 hat. So W1 over here represents the what is the weight vector from X1, what are the transformations and what are the weight vectors from the first input layer to the hidden layer, and W2 is what are all the weights which will be from the hidden layer to the output layer. Let's just understand through one single hidden unit of the particular hidden layer. If I want to calculate what is the computation at Z2, which is one hidden unit, what all information was being entered in that particular neuron, so we can see that after applying this bias, as well as the multiplication of the weights with respect to the inputs, that Xi, Xj over here, and Wj, 2 represents the X of jth, that is whatever the input of jth is, and applying the weight and multiplication with the weight and adding the summation to it, that entire information is being fed to this hidden unit. So let's apply this neural networks. Let's say I want to solve a problem, which is, will I be able to pass this applied machine learning course or not? And I want to build a two-feature model. So it depends upon the two features, that is X1 and X2. X1 represents the number of hours which I spend on the final project, and X2 is the number of the lectures that I attain. So here, we can represent those two features in a feature space in such a fashion that green dots represent the previous students who passed this exam, those who passed this course, and red represents those who failed that particular course. While I myself represent this purple, which is 4 and 5. 4 represents the number of lectures which I attended for that particular course, and 5 is the number of hours which I spent on that particular final project. So we can solve that problem using this neural network as well. Here, the input, which is the two features which we have seen before, 4, 5, is being fed to the neural network. And then after applying the single neural network, the hidden layers, and the output we get is prediction is 0.1 and the actual was has to be 1. Actual in the sense I should pass that course, but the predicted is just 10% of that I could be able to make up the course. So what's the reason that why the neural network is not being able to predict so well? Because it was not able to train. Neural network is something like a baby who is not being aware about what is being fed to the model, who is not being trained, who is not being fed any data beforehand. So once we train the model, we try to learn and unlearn the things, and we tweak with the hyperparameters. Only then the model is able to justify with the output that it needs to predict. So we need to quantify the loss. Loss is being defined as the what is the actual predicted output versus what was the actual output that was fed to the model. It represents that what was the predicted output, and so if the difference between the predicted as well as what is the actual value is higher, then it means that the model is not trained well. Then it means that the loss function is very high. So you need to retrain it either using the parameter tweaking or either feeding more data to the model. But if the values, like the predicted values as well as actual, they are on a similar, if the difference between them is small, then it means that the loss function was less. So it means that you are good to go with your model. Let's see how we train the neural network. We need to train our neural network in such a fashion that we should always be able to minimize the loss function. How we can minimize the loss function is to tweak our hyperparameters, and those two hyperparameters are nothing but the weights that we apply that are being fed to the model. And this W over here represents the weight being fed to the first, the weight weights of the first layer, weight of the second layer, and so on. We want to minimize the loss function, and therefore we need to tweak with our weights. Let's say this is a simple function wherein W1 not represent the first weight, the weight being applied, weight on the x-axis, and W1 is the weight on the y-axis. We need to minimize our weight loss function in such a fashion that it should be able to give minimum of the minimal values. So what we do is we first randomly pick any initial point which is present on that landscape. We compute the gradient. So this gradient will always give the direction of the maximal edge end. So we tweak and we apply this greedy approach that we take in the direction of the opposite direction of the gradient. And we do this until we get the point of convergence, until we get the minimum loss. So this algorithm can be summarized as, we initialize our weights randomly, we loop until the convergence, and we update our gradients, and then we update our weights. We compute the gradients and we update the weights in such a fashion that the initial weight, we subtract from the initial weights with the learning rate into the gradient which has been calculated in order to get the new weights. And then we return those weights. So the computation of those gradients is called the process of computation of the gradients and then transferring back from the initial layer is called process of the backpropagation. But it represents that how much small change in one weight can affect the entire loss, final loss. Using the chain rule, we can find that. Let's say we want to find loss function with respect to the W2 weight. Then what we'll do is, we have already the gradients vector at output. So we multiply the gradient, we backpropagate our gradients in such a fashion that we come up to the lower layer. And we repeat this for every weight in the network using gradients from the later layers. Here's a small demo wherein I played with the Vines data set and applied the machine learning model on top of it. After applying that model, it gives an accuracy of 97%. So we already saw the demo. So I really want to thank for the inspiration on the topic as well as the theoretical knowledge which I obtained. And the code base is available online. And thank you for the inspiration and, of course, Ashley for the cover illustrations. Thank you.
Cool. Almost died. Any questions? Yes.
Wait a second, there's questions coming.
Oh, sure.
Thank you for the talk. I'd like to ask about all this math you did implement on Go.
Yes.
But there are already implemented algorithms.
Absolutely.
with TensorFlow library or something like this. Why you didn't use this?
I mean, the accuracy of my model was giving out to be 97%, and I also implemented my algorithm, just starting from the very scratch in order to understand the integrities and the mechanics behind the algorithms by myself. I don't want to use already existing libraries. I know that it is doesn't make sense to reinvent the wheel, but in order to understand basics, how the feed-forward propagation or back-propagation works, I want to do it by myself.
Yeah, writing forward propagation in Go is not easy. I tried. Any other questions? Cool. Well, round of applause again.